The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are live at Twin Peaks in Buckhead. It is Dukes and Bell. Appreciate everybody chiming in. There's a lot of stuff going on today. Of course, this hour is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. We're going to talk about what's going on with the Dogs here in just a bit. We heard from Terry Fontenot earlier, and we're going to hear more from him as our general manager spoke to the media today. I thought some of the questions, again, you know, you try to get in as much as you possibly can. I will say this to the Falcon organization. Is 30 minutes really enough? It's the only time we're going to get a chance to talk to him. And it was almost like, 30 minutes, it's up. Let everybody ask their questions. Let everything get out there. Let him answer all the things, and then you don't have to do it again. But now we're still kind of craving a little bit more, Mike, because we're like, okay, well, one more question.
Hey, I'm Terry.
So with that said, that would be my only criticism. I'm only saying that to say it's the end of the year. Let the GM speak. Like, let the GM take as many questions as possible. I'm not telling you to be up there 3 hours. It's not a lecture hall.
Right.
But 30 minutes? Mike, we could have made it today. I mean, like, we thought we couldn't because we were on remote.
Correct.
We're here. But, like, literally, we could have made it if I would have known that was a situation.
Like, I appreciate him taking ownership of what didn't work. Look, I mean, there's certain things that are beyond his control. He goes, we thought we were getting elite quarterback play, and we didn't. Kirk Cousins just, you know, no one has an answer. The coach doesn't have an answer. The quarterback doesn't have an answer. The GM doesn't have an answer. So if you thought you were going to get the answer on what happened to Kirk Cousins, nobody knows. Other than everybody just continues to guess at it, that he had an injury, that he was never going to apparently reveal.
The fans guess.
The fans. And that's and media as well.
Yeah.
We'll get into it next segment. But, guys, Kirk Cousins is not going to be on this roster next year. Because they said he's going to be a back. You're not going to have a $45 million backup. You're going to split that cap hit and try to get that off the books as quickly and as painlessly as possible. So I've been going round and round on social media. We'll do a deep dive at 4:20 about what the big picture is with Kirk Cousins. And I've tried to explain, Russell Wilson had a better year than Kirk, and the Broncos couldn't find a trade partner. The Steelers just picked him up.
I agree. And I know there are other cap ramifications tied to this, which we haven't really discussed. But either way, they tried to address it today. And what Terry said was he was healthy. We, again, have to take their word for it.
Right. That's all you can do.
Because he's saying nothing was wrong, the play was unacceptable, but he was healthy. Then we still have this big mystery we've
got
to
solve. Then it gets into, like, something that, you know, and we're not going to even go down that road, but it becomes a thing between the ears,
yes,
for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
One caveat, too, guys, by the way, if Terry accidentally slipped today and did say there was something wrong with Kirk.
Trade value.
You get in. No. Trouble with the league.
Yeah, because you've been fudging the injury
reports.
You would
get
Yeah. Yeah, I said that last week. I mean, there are major ramifications if you're not clean with the injury report. Yeah. That's why Belichick used to skirt it, and other guys got in trouble for it and got fined for it and lost draft picks for it.
Yeah. That sucks. I mean, that just does. And I'll say this before we get into what's going on with Carson Beck, if you're just joining us and more dog conversation here. We're in this predicament because Kirk Cousins failed us.
That's period.
It. That's it.
And guys, we've said it a million times. I had more fun talking to Kirk Cousins this year. Sometimes, Carl, on the air, sometimes off the record. You and I just chewing the fat with him at practice while we're waiting to talk to somebody else.
And I say that, Mike, only, and I know that may sound harsh to people. Man, you're going to put that on his shoulders? If he's willing to tell us, guys, I wasn't myself and here's why, I'll be happy to retract it. But he failed us.
Period.
That's why we're here. It's why Raheem looks like he does, because he was leaning so much on an experienced quarterback to get it done. He failed Raheem. He failed Terry. Let's just be honest. That's what this is, and now everybody else is answering the questions except Kirk Cousins.
Right.
Is that fair? That ain't fair.
I would love to get a sit-down with Kirk. I mean, I don't know if Kirk's ever going to have some media availability. We'll do the best we can.
Sorry, Kirk.
We love the guy, but I mean, it just,
it's
but,
the
but,
truth.
But he's played in the NFL for 13 years. He knows what's expected of him. You know, Kirk knows what the knock on Kirk is. Kirk's the best thing Kirk is doing is signing contracts.
Man, he signed a lot of them.
And I thought, okay, you know what? We're going to get the best out of this guy when we're at 6-3, when we beat Tampa Bay down there, we come back, we beat the Cowboys. I'm like, oh, here we go. This guy is everything that everybody, including Bijan Robinson, said, oh, man, this guy's all that. You know, this dude's legit. And he's going to be the focal point. And then, unfortunately, that added to why I think there was such a reluctance to pull the trigger and get him out of there.
Yeah, I agree.
When he was failing.
Either way, we'll let you hear more of what Terry had to say. Tori McElhaney is going to join us coming up here, so we'll get her opinions on this stuff and what went down up there at the press conference as well. Right now, let's talk some dogs. So Carson Beck is entering the portal, and I know what you're thinking. Dukes and Bell, wait a minute. I thought he was going pro. So did we. Until today, where it comes out that he is entering the portal. Now, you're saying, why is he entering the portal and not going back to Georgia? Well, that's a good question, isn't it? Couple of things at stake here. One, health. His return, and as soon as he could possibly get on the field to throw, is going to affect his draft status. Guys,
right.
You got to have these pro days. I don't care what you do at the combine. You can tell me all that stuff. Teams have to be able to see you, especially right. at that position, and see you in an intimate atmosphere, Mike, where they want to see what you can do. The tape doesn't lie, but that's also a big part of this. If I can't do that, how are teams going to evaluate me, especially if I had an okay year?
Yeah, I mean, we know that they dropped a lot of passes, but he also had a terrible game against Alabama. It's a mediocre game. It's like Miss State. He just didn't look great. He didn't look like an elite quarterback. You know, and we talked about, you know, between he basically tried everything in his power to give Texas that game in Austin. And luckily, Georgia's defense was so good, or maybe Sarkin and yours were so inept, that Georgia was able to just get the ball right back. And, you know, we've already discussed Bobo. I'm not a fan of the way they didn't run the ball enough. But Carson Beck, he is a question mark. He's not a solid piece. That's why if he went right now, somebody would take a flyer on him in the fourth or fifth round on a guy coming off an arm injury. Now he has a chance to heal up because it's about 6 months, just like what happened with Brock Purdy, similar injury. He'll be ready to go for Miami in the summer, and then he'll just plug in, maybe throws for, you know, 30-some-odd touchdowns, and he's back to being a top 15 pick, which is what we thought he was going to be at the start of last year.
He threw 58 touchdowns in his Georgia career. Over 7,900 yards. He was productive. There's no debating it. But as you talk about this season and how you may judge him, what's it mean, Mike, for the Dogs? Does this automatically mean that Gunnar Stockton is your starter moving forward? Like, okay, we thought it would be that. Let's see who else is going to be in the room, as we said to Rusty Manziel, great interview that we did earlier, and it's online at odyssey.com. Or is this just his job to lose now? Like, he's the guy. Is it that the situation?
Gunnar Stockton's job. I mean, you know that Kirby – here's the thing. What does Gunnar Stockton have that, you know, Puglisi and anybody else doesn't have? At least one start for Georgia. Seems to be the make me – you're the most qualified guy by default. Jaden Rashada, shocking, has entered the transfer portal. There will be some more guys coming, but you're going to have a full year, maybe 2 years, of Gunnar Stockton as your starting quarterback, unless he gets taken up by an injury like JT Daniels. Otherwise, you don't get replaced at Georgia. They're going to always defer to the experience.
Yeah,
he did not do a bad job. I thought the Notre Dame was better. The offensive line issues we already discussed, they couldn't protect him. They couldn't run the ball. There was no balanced attack.
Zero. So that news comes in today, and I want to mention the schedule, Mike, because, again, Kirby wouldn't make excuses. It is what it is, and we got to go play it. But, man, the schedule was daunting. And it makes me wonder how much that played into, you know, where they ultimately ended up. Now, you got into the playoffs. But, Mike, I don't know if we've ever seen a schedule like this. And we talked about it all offseason last year, and we're kind of like, man, that looks tough. Then they got into it. We were like, holy crap, this is tough.
We always thought they'd going to lose. You know, we didn't realize that Alabama was going to have such a fall from grace, but we always thought the Alabama game was going to be tough in Tuscaloosa, the game in Texas. Then there was always the wild card of, then could you trip up against a Tennessee or an Ole Miss? Well, they didn't trip up against Tennessee, but they played one of their worst games of the season in Oxford.
Kirby said mental bandwidth. It's a term one of my boys uses. I don't know if you have the bandwidth to do
that.
It. He uses it all the time because we talk about taking on all this stuff. And Kirby alluded to this, and he says, you think about playing these SEC teams and having to get up for them physically in emotional battles every week. Not every player on your team is going to have the mental bandwidth to stay at that level to play like you need to.
Right.
So you have letdowns. When you have letdowns, you have drop balls, Mike. You have penalties. You have fumbles. All the things that cost Georgia, and I think Kirby's saying that, like, you play a couple of cupcakes, and I've said this for years. This is why coaches schedule this stuff, to
right.
give your team a little bit of a break. You can't play that daunting schedule, Alabama, Texas, Ole Miss, and just think you're going to run through everybody. And
no,
we saw that they didn't do that. He's right about this, and it's hard when you're talking about 18, 19, 20-year-old kids.
And by the way, based on how, again, next year's college football playoff committee members might be, they will be different. There's always some turnover. But they didn't reward the strength of schedule anyway.
At the end,
that's the crazy thing. But for much of the, at least when they give us something to talk about, the first four or five, they certainly weren't. And, look, there's no reason. They've got to come up with a new plan. Boise State should never have had a bye week. That was nonsense. You know, I know that strength of schedule, and whether it was SMU or whether it was Boise State, there was just something that didn't – Indiana had no business being in that thing. You know, I'm sorry. End of story.
11-win Big Ten, 10 yeah. team.
And then Cignetti, he coached like he's a scared little mouse in that game against Notre Dame. None of that Billy Badass stuff. No swagger. No explosive plays. No, they took fair catches on every kickoff.
They didn't do
nothing.
Jack. They didn't do jack. What's up, Turtle?
Some very interesting new information coming out from ESPN.
About?
Carson Beck.
Okay.
Source says that Beck received feedback that he would end up anywhere between the first and third round if he came out in the draft, with the uncertainty only due to the fact he would not be able to throw. That's shocking.
Well, he's got the tools. I've said this. I know a lot of people don't think he was any good. He's got NFL tools. That, to me, is what scouts have been saying to me. The range is shocking because
right.
would you go if they told you again? And I know you're saying it's the NFL. Guys, there's a big difference between first round and third round money.
Yes, big time.
And there's a big difference between the guaranteed money in the first round versus almost zero guaranteed money in a third round pick. Either way, I like this decision for him. I actually do. I thought he might come back to Georgia, Mike.
Well, and then we get into the debate. A lot of guys are asking, did Kirby's tell him via con Dios? Thanks, but no thanks. I think that's part of it. I think, you know, a new chapter, and then who knows? Maybe Miami's even going to even sweeten the pot. He'll make more money through NIL in Miami than he would in Athens, which is certainly a distinct possibility.
It's crazy.
But he's in a good spot. They take over for Cam, where they got a lot of weapons down there, and he'll put up some good numbers because, as you said, at best he'd have been a third round. Somebody take a flyer on him late second round, and you're going to stash him because he's not going to be ready to go.
Now, I said he's got the tools. We got to take a break because Torrey McElhaney's going to join us. Does he have the mental for the NFL? Is he ready
for
that?
I didn't like his decision making. I thought he made, and again, it wasn't always drops. He also threw some balls in some double
crazy
coverages and made some terrible mistakes with the football in a year when he should have known better. First year, yes. Second year, no.
All right, Tori's going to join us next. Falcons.com writer, reporter. We're going to talk to her about what Terry said today and kind of dissect some of this stuff for you guys who are just tuning in. What's up, Turtle?
Breaking news.
Okay.
Braves general manager Alex Anthopoulos will be joining us at 4:40 p.m.
Oh.
Hello. Nice.
Wait a minute. Hey, is Terry coming on the show?
We've actually now officially spoken to Alex Anthopoulos more in 2025 than we have to Terry Fontenot.
Where is Terry?
Torrey McElhaney joins us next. Talking about it all afternoon, and we will continue to talk about it with Torrey McElhaney from the Atlanta Falcons, Falcons.com writer, reporter. She does a great job. Reporter of the year, right? Is that right? Writer, sports writer.
Yes.
Torrey, congratulations on that, by the way.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. We know you do a great job. Everybody, and you know this, was anticipating what would be said today from Terry Fontenot. I love that he said from the jump, we are disappointed. You know, we know our fans are disappointed, and we didn't live up to it. Ownership, responsibility, accountability was a big deal. But Torrey, let's start with this Cousin stuff, because I know there were a lot of questions there.
Yeah.
What did you make of his answers as far as how they hope to handle this Cousin situation? Did you get any new insight from your perspective and what fans can expect is how this may play out?
Well, yeah, I think that when you think back to, you know, the week that they decided to move on from Kirk Cousins to Michael Penix, there were a few reports that came out that the Falcons were kind of heading towards a divorce with Kirk Cousins before the new league year had even gotten to, you know, March 15th. And in order to not have to pay out his $10 million roster bonus, well, Terry Fontenot essentially said today that there was no validity in those reports and that the Falcons foresee Kirk Cousins staying on this roster. But I kind of put an asterisk beside that because when he's asked about, you know, a potential trade, he's like, you know, we'll hear offers, but it has to be one of those things where everyone has to agree because Kirk Cousins does have a no-trade clause in his contract. So So while it is one of those things where you're looking at his contract and how much money the Falcons are going to take on, I don't foresee it being – I kind of take Terry Fano at his word that it's not going to be – they're not going to cut him, but they will hear potential trade offers. And if Kirk Cousins finds one that he likes, maybe that's on the table. But for right now, they're moving forward as he is Michael Penix's backup.
Now, again, a lot of our audience are of the impression we're going to be able to get, like, some high draft pick for Kirk Cousins. And I keep reminding them, Russell Wilson, statistically, Torrey, had a better year in 23 with the Denver Broncos, and they couldn't find a trade partner for him. And eventually they just outright released him, ate the cap hit, and the Steelers paid him the league minimum.
Yeah. No, exactly. And that's the thing is, like, you look at what Kirk Cousins put on film and on tape this year, and you really don't know what teams in the league are going to potentially offer up for him. And I think not even that. You think about the teams that are in really significant quarterback hungry scenarios. You think about a team like the Raiders or a team like the Browns, and it's like, is Kirk Cousins even a fit for what they would want to do? I mean, all of these things kind of play into one, what the offer could be. And, you know, Kirk Cousins has a say in this too. He essentially can say yes or no to any trade because of that no trade clause, because all he has to do is if there's an offer on the table and he's like, nah, I don't want to go to X, Y, or Z. He doesn't have to.
Torrey, our general manager today talked about, you know, some of the things that they have to address. And I know there's a lot of evaluating going on in the building. And, you know, he was talking about priorities on the defense. We can all agree that's where we need to get better, right? I think everybody can agree on that. What do you think the plan is? I mean, as far as evaluating the guys on our team and hopefully making them better and developing them, and how we go about this offseason?
Yeah, I think the first thing that I really think about is corners and essentially your slot nickel and also edge rushers. I think that you got a lot of really good production out of Arnold Ebiketie in the final half of the season, which was really good progress for him, but you need more than that. At corner, we're talking about A.J. Terrell going on 5-6 years in the league, and he's never seen the same guy line up opposite him at corner. And that, to me, I've always said I wanted a running mate for A.J. Terrell, and I didn't want it to be this, like, rotation and carousel year in, year out at that CB number two position. But you have to think about, like, again, how much cap space are the Falcons going to have? Is it something where they can make a move in free agency for a position like that? Because you're talking corner and edge rusher, those are premium positions that are going to cost you a pretty penny. So do you look at the draft? You have the number 15 overall pick in this coming draft class. That's prime real estate, in my opinion, for a defender like a corner or an edge rusher. So I think in terms of those two positions, and then also another part of this I don't think many people are talking about is the inside linebacker position. Yeah. Troy Anderson hasn't been healthy almost the entire time that he's been in Atlanta. Did you get enough out of Nate Landman to feel like you want to bring him back? I know how you feel about Caden Ellis, but he's on the last year of his deal going into next year. So there's some question marks there as well.
I know that there's no timeline or sense of urgency other than at some point before you start evaluating talent for the draft, you want to have all your assistant coaches in place. You think Jimmy Lake keeps his job?
I think the fact that we haven't heard anything to this point, it does. I don't think there will be one. Not saying that I have any like inside information on that, but like the fact that we are now over a week removed or going into a week removed from the season ending, and there's been no movement, I don't foresee it happening now.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's there is a moment, and it's not an emotional situation. I think we all saw, Torrey, and, you know, I know you are with Falcons.com, but, you know, you're at these games, and we all saw how our defense failed us, you know, and so you have to assign blame to that. How much of that is on the players? How much of that is on execution, scheme, et cetera? And so now I think we're at a point where everybody's calmed down a little bit, and you go, all right, do we really want to start over with a defensive coordinator, fair or unfair? And I, listen, Mike has said it all week. He would move on. But obviously it doesn't matter because the organization has that decision to make. We're talking with Torrey McElhaney here on Dukes and Bell as we discuss the Falcons and certainly the press conference today from our general manager. What's your take on Matthew Judon?
I think that it wasn't the year that I think it wasn't the year that he wanted. I don't think it was the year that the Falcons wanted in terms of production. You know, he did some good things in spurts, and especially once the defense got going later in the season. But from a body of work, it wasn't the same Matthew Judon that it had been in years past and who he was with the Patriots. And so same thing kind of for Justin Simmons. And it's really unfortunate because when you think back to when those moves were made in the middle of training camp, that was a huge boon for the Falcons. And it really felt like they were elevating in both of those positions. And then to not really feel as though things changed dramatically because of those, the insertion of those two players, it's a bit disappointing, especially when you know you sent a third-round draft pick up to New England for Matthew Judon.
Yeah. Very uneven. Torrey McElhinney is with us here. Join us on the WadeFord.com hotline. We had high hopes for him. And Justin Simmons, as we said, wasn't great either, if we're honest. The draft you already addressed, we can do that. Free agency-wise, this goes back to the Kirk Cousins stuff. You know, I mean, it's hard to think of Kirk Cousins sitting here at this stage of his career as a backup.
Yeah.
That's why,
yeah.
I mean, and then it's even harder to see a team that would say, I'm going to trade you anything other than a sixth or a seventh rounder, and maybe that's the best you could get, when I can just wait for you to release him, take your cap hit, $40 million against the number this year, then 25 the following year, which is tough in and of itself. Do you think that at the end of the day, when we're getting ready for the start of the season, week one, is Kirk Cousins on this team?
I mean, I think honestly it's going to come down to Kirk Cousins. Does Kirk Cousins want to be a backup? And I don't know. I mean, I think back to his press conference after the decision was made to go to Michael, and he said, you know, I didn't forget how to play the quarterback position. And he kind of said that he felt like there was still a story, his story was still left to be written. And that to me doesn't sound like someone who has been a starter for over a decade in this league, who is going to be content sitting back and being a backup. And, you know, we haven't had a chance to talk to Kirk Cousins since then. So I can't speak for him, but I think it's going to be up to him. I think if there's an offer on the table for him to be a starting quarterback via a trade, I would be really, really curious to see kind of where his values are as to what his future is and if he wants another shot at this.
The other big conversation, not only here on our show, but for Terry today, as we recap things with Torrey McElhinney, Younghoe Koo. Like,
yeah.
And listen, we love Koo as a dude, but
of course, yeah.
His kicking was up to par. Mm. And we think, Torrey, not only that he cost us a couple of games, but the injury may have, you know, and I don't know if he was telling him I'm fine and then going out there and missing kicks, but that was an issue. How do we move forward with Koo?
So I it's really tough because he's not producing at the clip that, one, the Falcons need him to, or two, what he has been previously. Like, we're talking about someone who was automatic there for a few years and won the Falcons a lot of games. So I think that's why it's this really difficult topic of conversation. But the thing is like, and I think it was Raheem who said this, you know, or it was Terry today, I can't remember exactly, but essentially, like, wanting to get Younghoe healthy before, but also bringing in competition to fully be able to decide one way or the other going into 2025 in that season what the kicking game is going to look like, because it has to look different than what it did this year. You lost games because you could not put the ball through the upright, and that's just a fact. You missed too many kicks in 2024, and that cannot continue in a league that values the one score game. It can't.
And Torrey, we talked a lot about the defensive side, which needs help. You mentioned the linebackers. You mentioned Anderson can't stay healthy. We talked about corners. They decided not to draft corners that were there to go with Rook Oro-Ro-Ro. Hope that he has a major impact next year. Braylon Trice, D-Led's of the impression he's just a dude. Can Braylon Trice be our savior as far as edge rush?
I mean, that's the hope, right? I think that he was trending in a very, very elite direction in training camp. And what you were seeing from him and how he was breaking into the starting rotation very early on, you felt really good about him. I know that the front office and all the guys in college scouting thought very, very highly of him. I know if you go back and you watch kind of his like draft moment when Terry and Raheem are in the war room and they're talking to each other, and Raheem's kind of telling him to relax when because Terry's worried that Braylon Trice is going to come off the board. Like, that tells you a lot about how highly they think of Braylon Trice. It's unfortunate that we didn't get to see him at all this year, because I do think he was trending in the right direction. But the thing is like, that's a serious injury. And can he come back and be still have the same potential that he had before? He's just a big question mark, and I'm not willing to put money down one way or the other, because you just don't know.
You don't.
Torrey, thank you so much. Great work, and congratulations on, you know, being at least acknowledged as to how good of work you've done this last year. But you're always good, and we appreciate your time.
Thank you guys so much. Y'all have a good weekend, and y'all be safe out there.
No doubt. Right on. No doubt. All right, guys. Double A, Alex Anthopoulos, Braves general manager, is going to join us next. Braves did do a couple of moves today, which prompted us to pick up the phone and make the call, and the general manager picked it up and answered.
How about that?
Coming up, we'll find out where the Braves are going this offseason with Double A next. And then the guy we're about to talk to, I think he's the best in the business, and I've said that to him publicly and privately. He joins us now here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Alex Anthopoulos, a couple of things to mention, by the way, for the Braves. They avoid arbitration on a couple of guys, and we'll get to that. Alex, first and foremost, how are you doing?
Doing well, guys. Glad to be on.
Thank you so much. Let's talk about this offseason. A question we continue to get, Alex, is are we going to add to this pitching staff? Obviously, Braves fans seeing pitchers around the league end up in various spots. We know about the Max Fried situation as he goes to a different team. And, you know, congratulations to him. But what are we going to attempt to do to improve our pitching?
Yeah, so we've definitely had some, you know, conversations, free agency and trade for rotation. I think the thing for us is Strider looks like he's going to be back sooner rather than later. He's going to have a normal spring training. You know, we're not going to put him on the opening day roster, but you know, he'll appear in spring training games. So right now he's doing well, and even though he won't be on the opening day roster, we don't think it'll be too far beyond that. Again, we'll probably have a more definitive date as we get to mid-March, late March. But you start factoring in Strider, in whatever order you want to put it in, Strider, Sale, Lopez, Schwellenbach, those four. You know, whoever we add from the outside for us has to be someone clearly better than Ian Anderson, who's out of options. He's got to make the team. And
right.
Like, I know we haven't thought about Ian Anderson much, but you know, in 2020 he was our number two starter, and we went to Game 7 of the CS. In 2021, when they won the World Series, he was our number three starter. I mean, we're talking about filling that fifth starter spot. Now we want five great starters, but you know, to throw him away. And I'm not saying, you know, he still has to make the team and so on, but he's had a normal offseason. Guy was a top five pick in the draft. He's still young. And he has every opportunity to come in and make that team. Now, if we can go get a frontline guy, and that means Ian's got to be in the bullpen as a long guy and so on, we'll do that. But, you know, the other guy is Grant Holmes. I know it was only seven starts, but we like this stuff quite a bit. So we've been active. We obviously haven't gotten anything done, but the bar is high for us, you know. We're not looking to get a back end guy and so on. We'd like to get someone that we'd feel pretty good could slot in with those other four. You know, any one of those four, we'd be excited about starting a playoff game. So I think if you see us add, most likely it'd be someone that we felt pretty good taking the ball in a playoff game, because they would ultimately be blocking Anderson and Holmes and some of the other kids. Mm.
It is the general manager, Alex Anthopoulos, of your Atlanta Braves. Dukes and Bell, we're live at Twin Peaks in Bunkhead, getting ready for the national semifinal tonight, Penn State, Notre Dame. We'll ask Alex his football picks later, even though he is from Canada. Alex, the bullpen.
How you feeling about your 7 years?
I know, I'm breaking your chops. How you feeling about your bullpen? Are there pending moves there?
Yeah, I mean, the loss of Joe Jimenez is significant. You know, it's definitely significant, and we've had conversations about late-inning relief. You know, internally, Daysbell Hernandez was up and down the majority of the year, but at the end, Snit was going to him in big-time spots. And I remember one game, I think it was a Sunday game against the Marlins, bases loaded. Season's on the line every game at that point. Mets were playing at night against the Phillies. And he brought in Daysbell Hernandez. You know, and we had Joe and we had Pierce and we had other right-handers, but he really threw the ball well. So, you know, I do expect him to take on more of a role. He's still got to earn it. He's got options and stick, but we'd love to have more depth, but look, we had a really good bullpen last year, a really deep bullpen. And Joe, right now, at best, it's back at the All-Star break. It could be where he misses the season. and he's back in 26. So as we get closer, we'll know a little more. But, again, if we think that there's something there where we can improve that depth, get someone we think would be an upgrade over Days Bell, and Days Bell could be a guy to compete for the spot in the pen or be optioned, we look to do that as well.
Alex, the decision on Charlie, how difficult was that to allow him to, you know, hey, we're not bringing you back? I had heard that he wanted to maybe come back here. I don't know if that was necessarily true. Talk about that decision.
Yeah, I want to be careful just to respect him, but no, he's been great. And look, he made a great choice with the Orioles. One, it's a contending team. They've won the division. They've made the postseason. Drew French was our bullpen coach here. He's now the pitching coach there. This is year two for him, so there's familiarity and relationships there. And Sarasota is close to home for spring training, so it made a whole lot of sense. We spoke. We definitely had conversations early in the winter. I think ultimately, for us, with where the contract went, and, you know, Charlie deserves it. He's been amazing for us. But I think, you know, you look at, you know, the contract that he got, and blocking Anderson, blocking Holmes, weighing all those things together, ultimately, I think, it ended up working out for him that he ended up with the Orioles. But it's tough because that guy's been incredible. He's been a great teammate. It's tough. There's things behind the scenes that no one sees where he helped a Max Fried, he helped a Schwellenbach, he's helped a Strider. The little conversations about grips or about your routine or taking care of yourself or how you attack guys, that's really, really valuable. But the hope is that all the time that he did spend here, all the time that he spent around these guys, they've now learned and they can continue to pay that forward. But I think the one for us is that it was really tough is just, blocking, putting Holmes and Anderson in the bullpen because they're both out of options. You can't send them to Gwinnett. You can't leave them there as depth. Again, the bar is high for us to block those guys because they're young guys. We've got them under club control for 6 more years for Holmes, 4 more years for Ian Anderson, and specifically Anderson because he's been such a big part of the team. Again, didn't have a great year, was rehabbing the whole way, came back in the middle, was just so-so-ing Gwinnett, never really got going. But we do believe a normal offseason for him coming in the spring training. I'm excited about what we're going to see. This was a big-time guy for us. And now because we've built so much high-end depth with the other four I brought up, I mean, you think about 2-3 years ago, we talked about Ian Anderson being our fifth starter. So that's a really good rotation. Now, he's got to earn it, and he's got to earn that rotation spot. And, there's still a scenario that we do make a trade. We do sign someone. So, signings have been slow. There's been a bunch of activity, but it won't surprise me if signings kick into February the way it's going. It has been slow.
Okay, I was going to say, because it has been slow for the Braves, this hot stove league, but I know you always, we joke around that you shop with a Groupon, and you always get the value. Chris Sale's one of the most brilliant strokes from a general manager we've seen in a while. It's Alex Anthopoulos with this guy's Falcons GM. What he have to say, you'll hear that coming up at the top of the hour. The 7-8-9 spot has been such a strong suit, and I know last year Alex threw it all out because the injuries just killed us, but are you getting enough from the shortstop position? Are you getting enough from the catcher position as far as the plate?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's no doubt Sean Murphy and Orlando did not have the seasons they were capable of last year. With the injuries, what happened was everything was exacerbated. You had Orlando Arcia hitting fifth a bunch of times last year. And again, that's not to be critical of Snit. That's because that's the roster I gave him. That's the depth that we had, and we weren't positioned to overcome that. Eventually, we pieced it together, but, we've had such great offensive teams for years now, and last year was a step back. And really, other than Ozuna, everyone took a step back. And now part of it was the injuries, part of it was slow starts. But the way the offense was designed is, for guys to hit more, like you said, to the bottom of the lineup. And if everyone else is healthy and durable like they have been in their career, you look at the back of the baseball card on these guys and their games played, these guys have been durable. Last year, based on career, it was an outlier with all those injuries for so many guys. So, but look, if we can do better, we certainly will. We haven't ruled anything out. But I would tell you that, yeah, if there's some type of bat we've explored, I don't want to get into the positions because I don't want to call out our current players, but, we have looked at adding some type of bat. I can't promise that we're going to do that, but that's been part of the conversation.
Alex, you avoid arbitration with Dylan Lee and Jared Kelnick. Talk about their roles and the value to those guys on this team.
Yeah, just the arbitration process is pretty straightforward. Basically, you have, you know, assuming guys come up and stay up, you get them for 6 years. The first 3 years, they basically make the minimum or a little bit above. Clubs can basically set salaries. And then the next 3 years, you go through salary arbitration where, you know, they have a chance to get into comparisons and so on. And if both parties can't agree, you end up going to a hearing. And it's basically like going to court. You argue your case, and you know the player argues it, the club argues it, and at the end of the day, everyone agrees the player should get a raise. It's just you get a third party to decide what that salary is. But I don't view it as any big deal because they're still going to show up in spring training. They're still going to be on the roster. So the way the system is set up is for these guys to come to agreements and to come to terms and to get deals done. But look, Jared will come in and compete. You know, he came in. He was a platoon guy to start. Him and Adam Duvall lost their job to Ramon Laureano. Harris and Acuna will be the mainstays for sure. And then the other outfield spot, we'll see. We'll see if somebody else comes in, trade, signing, and so on. So we haven't closed the door on that, but he'll have an opportunity to come in and compete. And then Dylan Lee, again, we had a crowded bullpen. He got optioned twice, but he had a great year for us. He's done a really nice job. He's really starting to emerge, and having depth from the left side, him and Aaron Bummer, I think are going to be really important for this team. So glad to have him back, and I expect them to be important parts.
Alex Anthopoulos with us, guys. Braves general manager here on Dukes and Bell on 92.9 The Game. I know we mentioned Strider and, you know, his timeline. Are you expecting Acuna to hit the ground running? What's the realistic expectation? Do we see Acuna getting back to being MVP caliber? It's going to take a minute.
Yeah, so he, if you look at the injury that he had in 21, basically he had this new one, which was the other knee. He had it 6 weeks earlier. In 21, he had it at the All-Star break, middle of July. This past year, he had it third week of May. So there's already a six-week gap. And if you look at when he started a rehab assignment in the 22 season, he was coming back, I think it was April 9th. So if you went from April 9th and said, okay, well, it was 6 weeks earlier, and you move backwards, now you're basically into late February would be the equivalent of him starting a rehab assignment. We're not going to do that with him. In hindsight, as much as he felt great and the doctors cleared him, we probably should have given him more time. He was fine that year, 22, but he was an MVP, dynamic Ronald Acuna. So that's why we've come out on the front end and said, look, you're not making the opening day roster. You're going to see him in spring training. He's going to be swinging. He's going to be running. He's going to be shagging. We'll see if he ends up getting into games. I'd guess no. Strider will, but we just want to make sure that we take our time with him. But look, he's doing great. So just based off the previous injury, if we did the exact same thing and started a rehab assignment on April the 9th, for example, that would be 6 weeks longer than he did the first time. So we haven't committed to that. Will it be 6 weeks longer, 8 weeks longer, 10 weeks longer? We'll just see how things go as we get to March, but he's doing really, really well, and he'll be back sooner than later one way or the other.
Alex, we appreciate you stopping by. We know that you pay attention to Atlanta sports. Frustrating for our Falcons. The other general manager of our team today, Terry Fontenot, spoke to the media as they closed things out for the season. Just any thoughts as we wrap up real quick about the Falcons? Because we kind of all thought that they might make the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I was locked in the entire year. My son, we were in Canada for the holidays, and the Sunday night game, my 12-year-old son, we let him stay up. It was late. Obviously, he was upset. And he normally doesn't get all that fired up, but he was fired up, boy. He was crushed. I love seeing the passion, right? That's why we do this. That's why you guys have a show. We're fans. And that's why in my current job, I can't be a fan, right? Because I know too much. I know the players. I know the personalities. I like being a Hawks fan because I don't know anything, and I'm just a fan, and I get to have that outlet. But look, there's a lot of good signs going forward. But yeah, it was tough. I mean, we're right there. Even the last game, I mean, man, that was a shootout.
I know.
But obviously the defense, even though the Bucks came back late, but we were following that game as well. We were flying back, and we were following on the plane, so it was kind of crazy. But look, I'm excited about, obviously, Bijan's been incredible. Drake has just taken the next step as an elite guy. And look, yeah, from a defensive standpoint, I thought the turnaround with the pass rush, first 3 weeks or 3 months or so, whatever it wasn't there, and it started to come on a little bit late. So I'm an optimist. I think they're close, and they were right there this year. And look, I've been here 7 years in Atlanta, and I don't know if it's like a the curse of since I've been here, they haven't been to the postseason. But like, This was the latest. You know, I'm following. This was the first time I got to follow to the last day that the games mattered, and I think they're about to kind of break through.
Right.
Good stuff.
All right, man. So we should expect a little bit of stuff before pitches and catches. Hopefully, we'll be talking about some more signings before then. Alex, thanks again.
All right, guys. Always enjoy it.